Consequence Podcast Network.
So what's about to happen? We have not rehearsed. We haven't planned. We've communicated about it, not at all, other than the fact that it was going to happen. So this is probably going to be terrible. Just terrible. But we're going to do it anyway. For two reasons. One, because it's on theme for this episode.
Yes.
Which is about Steven Universe. The other, because it is Kate fucking Kulczyk's fucking birth fucking day.
Yes. Happy fucking birthday.
And her sister is here with her tiny ukulele that has a watermelon on it.
It's beautiful.
And she is going to play her tiny cute ukulele. And we are going to attempt to sing the Steven Universe theme song. Can you give us a little...
If you're evil and you're on the rise, you can count on the fellas digging you down. Cause we're good and evil never beats us. We'll win the fight and then go out for pizzas. We are the crystal gems. We'll always save the day. And if you think we can't, we'll always find a way. That's why the people of this world are leaving. Garnet, Amethyst, and Pearl.
And Steven!
Steven!
Woo! Welcome to TV Party. I am Allison Shoemaker.
I am Clint Worthington.
I'm Kate Kulczyk.
And we have Kate is a special guest, obviously.
Yes.
And it's her birthday, so she's an extra special guest, but we have another special guest who will probably mostly be listening, but tell the people who you are.
Hi, I'm Maggie.
What's your last name now?
Kulczyk.
Kulczyk still? Yeah. Good girl.
Yes.
That's
good
great.
On you.
Thank you.
How recently married?
Oh, no. 6 years.
Okay. It just feels like
that's recent in gem years.
Like we had a lot of conversation about weddings because Clint is about to get himself hitched.
Yeah. So these episodes kind of hit home for me.
I bet.
Yeah.
So this is
a show that hit home for me for like 5 seasons.
Yeah.
In a week.
Yeah. I did a lot of crying this week. About Steven Universe. Also about the state of the
happy
world.
Tears,
let's be
yes.
real. But yeah, like, but about Steven Universe in a good way. In a real way.
No.
This is our third Just Do This For Me. And if you're just dropping in for this one, this is where somebody says, will you please just do this for me? Watch whatever. We did one sort of trial run where Clint started watching Drag Race for mm-hmm. me. That was
nice.
For me.
Yeah.
Clint and I watched our first ever WrestleMania for LaToya Ferguson and Dominic Suzanne Mayer. And now Kate Kulczyk has said on air without talking to us about it first,
yeah.
which is the best way to make sure somebody says yes to you.
Yep.
Said, please just do this for me. Will you watch Steven Universe? And so we did. I made my way through basically 3.5 seasons. Clint got through 4 and change.
I'm caught up. Yeah.
So we both have like a lot of watching still to do. And for that, I personally am very grateful because I am going to dread running out of like from this point. I mainlined Steven Universe this week. But from this point on, I am probably going to watch them at a slow trickle to sort of like stretch it out since apparently they just don't tell you when they're coming back.
Yeah. No, that's a thing. Yeah, it's definitely a thing.
See, I can't. I have to protect me. I have to think of me.
But also, we as TV critics, we have to like be weirdly mindful of schedules.
Oh, yeah.
We have to know when things are happening. Yeah. And the fact that it's so unpredictable is like weirdly maddening.
But I'm gonna ration this. I have this tendency where if there's a show I really love that I don't have to watch for money and it's ending, I will often put off watching from anywhere from the last season to the last 5 episodes to just the finale for actual years. I didn't watch the finale of 30 Rock for like 3 years.
Wow.
Just the last episode, just last lunch. I saved it for, I think it was 3 years. I just never watched it. I put off watching the final episode of Gilmore Girls for years.
Wow.
I put off the end of Parks and Rec. I put off the final season, complete season of Parks and Rec for years. So I'm going to ration this bad boy out because I just love it. You were right. before we get to the official discussion, when we talked about this initially, I'm pretty sure I mentioned that I sometimes have a hard time with animated TV. It's just like, I always enjoy watching it, but it's, for whatever reason, it's harder for me to get emotionally connected. And I had a conversation with Randall Colburn, also a sometimes TV party guest, a contributor to Consequence of Sound. He has the same thing, but for him, it also relates to animated movies. And that's not the case for me. I don't have a problem with animated movies at all. I think maybe partially because so many of them are musicals, which might have something to do with this.
Right.
Because I didn't have this issue at all. From the beginning, I was like, this is so weird and cool. I'm really into it. And then they started singing and I was like, I never end. I don't want you to ever end.
Right. No, it's fascinating. And then like, well, we knew that it was going to have great music because Kate, you recommended it. So we
Kate
just like knew naturally.
Kate doesn't fuck around when it
comes to music. Yeah, exactly. So it was something that I had heard of and it was in the periphery and all that. So like that was nice. But yeah, just actually digging into it, it's one of those shows that like slowly creeps its way into your heart. Because it, you know, we'll talk about it more in depth. But yeah, it's just it starts out as your sort of typical Adult Swimmy kind of TV show and then grows from there into something vastly more interesting.
I have a very specific anecdote to share about that I'm going to wait until we have gotten done talking about The Week in TV.
Yeah.
I hope we move through that quick because, guys, I want to talk about Steven Universe so much.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure that most of our runtime is on that. So let's talk about our picks of the week. We're going to skip news because fuck news.
Yeah. It was a slow news week. We couldn't think of anything important. And
yeah,
like,
I mean,
you guys don't care.
I guess the only thing is that it came out that Timeless is that Sony had already approached all the streaming services about picking up Timeless and they all passed.
Mm.
So people were like, maybe Netflix will save it. And finally, the Timeless writers ran on Twitter and was like, no, that's not happening.
Yeah,
that's officially done. But they are still in talks for a movie. So hopefully that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah,
hopefully it's not like a Farscape situation where like the whole movie is just let's pack all of the third season into an hour and a half.
I just want they save Rufus and then they all retire.
Yeah, that's all we need.
Happily ever after. Please.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't they?
Yeah.
Come on.
And
they deserve
nobody
it.
Hooking up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's yeah. Nobody. Well, no. G and Rufus can still.
Yes.
That's fine.
Yeah,
they do
still
whatever
get it.
They want. And I want Agent Christopher to stay married.
Yeah.
So I guess it's really just Wyatt and Lucy. Well, and Wyatt and Jessica. No. Does that Wyatt needs time to himself.
Yeah. He needs That's to figure some shit out.
He needs to eat, pray, love a little, I think. All right. So let's talk about our week.
Yes. Kate, why don't you start?
Well, my first pick for the last week's TV is mostly just following on from last week's episode to say, like, Dom was super right. Hannah Gadsby's Nanette is amazing. It's really good. It's funny. It's moving. It's everything that he said last week. I was really, you know, because I've watched it several times. Like, at the beginning of the week, I was like, I should watch all the shows I need to watch because I'm super behind. But I watched Annette, and I kind of just want to keep watching that again and again because it's really, really good. The craft from Gadsby is remarkable, and the hour-long special is terrific, and it's very funny. It's very interesting. It's not like a laugh riot. That's not what she's going for. But as far as like a combination comedy special and one-woman show, it really works incredibly well. It's stuck with me. Like, very few things have this year. I would put up with Atlanta and The Americans as far as things that have stuck with me this year. It's actually better than everybody has been saying, and that feels, you know, unusual, because usually these things get hyped and then when you actually watch it, it's underwhelming. But for me, at least, it was real good. And thank you, Dom, if you're listening, because I really put it on the must watch after Dom's recommendation last week, and I'm so glad that I did. But aside from that, I also want to mention Claws had another terrific episode, Scream, which was a Quiet Anne episode. So Judy Reyes got like a spotlight episode where we watched the character. We followed the character through the episode and got her internal monologue. And then the character finally reached her breaking point, hence the title of the episode, Scream. It was really good. And Claws just got renewed for its third season.
Nice.
So
Yay.
If
Hooray.
You weren't sure if you should catch up with Claws, you should catch up with Claws. It was real good.
Got to get that Niecy Nash action.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Allison, what are your picks?
I am going to go with two episodes that I thought were both flawed but really interesting. and I hate that word, but it's the what they're trying to do is unexpected and a little ambitious and a little surprising, and I think that that's great. So the first is an episode of The Bold Type called Stride of Pride, in which if you haven't seen The Bold Type, it centers on three young women who live in completely unrealistic apartments in New York City with fabulous wardrobes.
With an unrealistically fantastic boss.
There are fantastic bosses out there.
But she is like, she is a saint.
She's a magic boss.
Melora Hart is a living saint.
You think that she is going to be Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada, and instead she is Meryl Streep in life. and it's wonderful. It's just
she's Trump's speech, Meryl
Melora
Streep, yeah.
Hardin. She's just fucking great. Anyway, it centers on these three young women. They have a really terrific friendship that typically doesn't encounter all that much difficulty. If they run into trouble with each other, they sort it out. And that is what happens here. But in this case, two unrelated storylines directly collide when one character, Kat, a biracial black woman played by the terrific Aisha Dee, also from Sweet Vicious, just she's really great, is trying to hire somebody for her department at Scarlet, the magazine Scarlet, and specifically wants to hire a Latino woman who does not have a college degree, who has a huge social media following but does not have a college degree. And it immediately gets bumped by the board of directors as not qualifying for the role. So she is sort of fighting that battle. And then Tiny Jane, played by Katie Stevens, has been unemployed for several episodes now, gets a job. She gets an interview for a job she thinks she's going to be really great at, obviously crushes the interview. It's one of those interviews where you walk out just assuming you've got it because the person, hiring manager or whatever, is so positive and hints so heavily. And then she doesn't get it, gets a phone call letting her know that she's not going to get it because they're looking to diversify their staff. And she is understandably disappointed that it doesn't get, that she doesn't get the job, but it asserts itself saying, well, it's just so frustrating because like, I feel like I would get it, but oh, they want diversity. And she is rightly called out, by Kat saying, okay, so you want diversity, but just not when it affects you. And they have this, a couple, like three tricky, but with the exception of the first one, not acrimonious conversations where they explain where they're going from and they communicate openly and honestly and they don't pull punches, but neither of them are cruel. Neither of them reacts in an outsized way, even though it would be very understandable, particularly in Kat's situation, for her to react in an outsized way. And I just think that it is so great that a show where the target audience is like 17-year-old girls is choosing to do this with its time. And it's a huge change from the first season, which I also liked very much, which basically pretended that Kat wasn't black. Very strangely, just like didn't acknowledge. Yeah. It was weird. But I just was really impressed by that. The rest of the episode didn't thrill me. And Kate and I were talking about this before we started recording, and she feels they could have gone a little bit further, and that is absolutely true. But The Bold Type is often like training wheels on bigger issues that you 17-year-old girl that we're hoping is watching should probably explore. And they do a really, really nice job with that. They did it a couple of times in season one to great effect, once about the breast cancer gene, once particularly memorably about rape, surviving rape, living as a survivor, talking about rape, talking to people who are open about their experiences. And this, I think, is more of the same. Mm-hmm. So, and continuing a trend, because this this season opened with two characters having a fight about oral sex in a bar, a very calm fight about oral sex in a bar in which everybody was recognizably embarrassed and self-conscious, but nobody was like in hysterics, and it was great.
Right. Honestly, the weirdest part of that episode, we mentioned this before recording, is that all three of them are unrealistically amazing at karaoke. That they're all three perfect singers, perfect harmony, perfect choreography on Mamma Mia.
Just in time for Mamma Mia too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Take that, The Bold Type.
A delight. A delight. My other episode is an episode of The Handmaid's Tale, the penultimate episode of the season postpartum, which does some things that are really frustrating. It's been a frustrated, like, impressive, affecting, frustrating season of The Handmaid's Tale. But good God, it takes this turn, and I'm spoiling a little bit for Kate, but you're just going to have to deal. It takes this turn when Emily, Alexis Bledel's character, is assigned to a new home after her previous commander dies during a ceremony.
Yeah.
And she shows up, and her commander is Bradley Whitford, who strolls down from the Jane Eyre attic to like a museum of modern art with just giant stacks of paper everywhere, to playfully bicker with the one-eyed Martha about not touching his shit. And she says, "Try it, old man." And it's nuts. It's like a completely different show, but in a good way. It's like all of a sudden The Handmaid's Tale has decided that playing with tone is something they're interested in beyond occasionally just doing like a slow motion power walk set to like an off tone needle drop, right? This is like, it really feels like they're using a different color palette. But the biggest difference for me, and there are some AV Club commenters who thought that Whitford is overacting, and I totally disagree, is that I was shocked at what a relief it was to have a male character on the show I was at all interested in. And he's almost certainly deeply evil. I'll be curious to know what you think when you see it. It plays with some things that I think are really interesting, but ends on an undeniably ominous note. He's like almost certainly very, very evil. At the very least, he just does not know how to talk.
They didn't cast the villain from Get Out for nothing.
Well, but they also cast Josh Lyman, you know what
also
I mean?
True.
And don't think that they're not playing with that.
Or sorry, the villain from Billy Madison.
Also the villain from Cabin in the Woods. But yeah. Then the like occasionally sniveling, sometimes really wrong-footed, but still hero of the West Wing. Anyway, it's frankly, he could just be a good actor and it would be a good change. But even if he's just a bad guy, it's layers on layers on layers. And I got that out of maybe three scenes. I was more interested in his three scenes than I have been in all of Josephine's scenes put together.
Mm-hmm.
You could take just the fight that he has with Serena in Holly the episode previous, and if all of the Josephine scenes were like that, it would probably be about even. But it's not. So, yeah. Anyway, Handmaids, postpartum. I cannot wait to hear what y'all think of this stuff.
Nice, nice. Well, we do have to watch it for next week because we'll cover Handmaids next week.
Yeah, we'll be talking about Handmaids next week.
Yeah. All right. Well, my picks. On The Expanse. No, I'm just kidding. It's done. Don't worry. First off, again, I'm a huge fan of FX's Pose. And, we talked about that at length last episode, so I won't go into too much detail. But the most recent episode, Mother's Day, I believe, is the fifth episode. And it was just fantastic. It continues the show's tradition of taking episodes and centering them around a theme and seeing how the characters bounce around with that. And this episode specifically talked about Blanca's biological mother dying and her reckoning with the transphobia that happens around her family and conflicting with her desire to not only attend her mother's funeral, but to bring her own chosen family, her house, to that. And in this, at the same time, she ends up coming to a kind of reconciliation with a post-op Elektra, who is, again, her chosen mother. She has a great scene with Elektra in the hospital. And it's just, it's another one of those fantastic episodes that manages to juggle that Ryan Murphy theatricality with a kernel of emotional truth that I really, really enjoy. And Pose is just keeps getting better with every episode.
But real quick, what was the best Pray Tell sick burn? Was there any good ones? Were there any good ones?
I'm completely blanking on them.
That's all right.
Yes,
Pray Tell is an episode six conversation.
We just can't think of them, but yes.
As always, they're great. But in terms of having a grand old time, I'm going to revisit one of Dom's picks from last week, which is Glow. And he's correct in that the second season is incredible. Especially episode 8, The Good Twin, which does something really amazing in that the entire runtime of the episode is just an episode of the show within a show, where they do their best to recreate kind of the atmosphere, with a slightly bigger budget, mind you, of the old Glow television show, complete with, like, the hokily staged, hokily? I hope that's a word, vignettes about Ruth's character Zoya and her good twin taking a cult to America to find her evil twin sister and all of that, and continuing all these different storylines, but centering it around the diegesis of Glow as a product. It's so fascinating to see a show that is sort of, it's more or less about all the behind the scenes stuff and the way they're preparing for this stuff. It's nice to see them confident enough to just like sell a high concept episode of the show this cast has been building towards. And it's cheesy in all the right ways. And I loved it so much. It was a fun little like 25 minute bit of sunshine in an already great season. So I just loved that.
Sweet.
Even if you don't watch Glow as a show, just watch that episode. And I think you'll have a grand old time. Yeah.
Cool. Great. People who have actually seen Yakov Smirnoff and Branson, yeah, that what a country.
Yeah. And it absolutely peddles in that dad joke kind of humor. Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful.
We've got one last thing to do before we get to the main event.
Mm-hmm.
Clint.
Yes.
Would you like to share with me this week's Bachelorette haiku from you?
Nothing would make me happier.
Hit me.
Didn't watch this week. So Chris R. got the boot, right? Please tell me he's gone.
Mine is kind of an answer to yours, unintentionally.
Call and response.
What the fuck, Chris R.? What did you think would happen? That's a dumb move, bro.
Yeah, Chris R. did not fare well this last week.
That's all you need to know. Yeah. This is more time than The Bachelorette deserves.
Yes.
So we will not go into detail.
You want to speak of this again?
We also realized that we skipped The Bachelorette haikus last week, which is exactly what Jordan deserves.
Yep.
So, moving on.
He doesn't even go to this school.
She doesn't even go here. So, Steven Universe.
Yes.
Cartoon Network darling. Musical paradise.
Cultural phenomenon.
Font of delight. Endless font of delight. We did this for Kate Kulcik. And she is going to sort of steer us through this. But before we do that, here is when it clicked for me that there was a buck ton going on in this show. So I watched like the first six episodes with my partner, and he had also never seen it, and we were just sitting on the couch watching the show, enjoying it. We like, by the time we got to Cheeseburger Backpack, we were really on board, just like having a really good time. And I said, you know, I have to keep watching this without you. I have to watch while you're at work. I have to get through as much as I can before we record this episode. He was like, that's fine, just, you know, like if you feel like it's relatively uneventful, you can just fill me in. That's fine. It's like, okay. So then I watched, I don't know, the next 15 without him. And he was like, so how's Steven Universe? I was like, oh, it's great. I'm having a really good time, but it is pretty uneventful. It's like, what happened? Well, I mean, not really all that much. Well, so he's got a pet lion now. It's Peyton. Oh, and I forgot. It's got a sword in it. Oh, and there's also like a pocket dimension. But anyway, that's like a different thing. And so then this happens, this. And I just started saying all these little things, like all these little reveals, without even really going into the plots of the episodes. Just, oh, and his dad, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and Connie, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and this, oh, and that. Oh, and he can have giant bubbles come out of him. And oh, he realized a shield comes out of his belly button. And oh, blah, 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 blah. And at the end of it, I realized it had been like 6 minutes. And Tom was just staring at me. And then he was like, so, you know, that's a fuck ton of information, right? It's like, oh, he was like, yeah, it sounds to me like a lot happened, and I should probably just catch up on my own. I was like, yeah, I guess you should. And that's when I realized that despite the fact that they all feel like trifles, well, let's say the lighter ones feel like trifles, there's so much happening.
Yes.
It felt to me like I had just watched a bunch of nice little fluffy things where there were no like big, huge events. And then I described just crazy things. Crazy, crazy things. And he has referenced it almost daily since we had that conversation because he thinks it is the stupidest I have ever personally been. Like, as it was happening, he was just like, look at me, like, you're just not even hearing yourself. This is astounding. Okay. All right, Allison. Right. So, yes, that is when I fell in love with Steven Universe. Well and truly. Really, it was the cheeseburger backpack, but... and also kind of Tiger Millionaire. So that was like another level. And then I made Dom watch that. I made him watch it.
Oh, good.
We watched it together. One of the several times I watched that episode was with Dom.
Good.
He showed up at my house for a meeting, and I was like, before we do anything else, we are watching this episode of Steven Universe, and I'm not even going to tell you why. And then at the end of it, he was like, that was so, I feel so seen.
I know. Yep. I think I told him over Slack that, like, that's the most I've ever understood wrestling.
Yeah, totally. Way more than actually watching wrestling.
Yeah.
That was definitely the most I've ever
absolutely
understood wrestling.
For me, I think, Kate, you warned me sort of watching, you know, going into this, that the first half of the first season is a bit more of that trifle that you mentioned before it starts getting really into the emotional complexity that is one of the biggest surprises of the show.
Yeah.
And I think really once you get to the episode where Steven finds the tape of Rose Quartz... which is, I think in a previous episode, I mentioned that I was watching Steven Universe and there were episodes that made me cry. This is one of them. This is the first of many that made me cry because it reminded me of a Cowboy Bebop episode that's very similar. I'm just a sucker for of Steven's whole journey of trying to understand this, this parental figure that he's never known. And like, you know, this using the medium of film and video as like a way to sort of immortalize that person. And she passes these lessons down. I guess it reminds me of that Michael Keaton movie where he's dying and he makes all the tapes for like his kid, but in a good way. And but that was when it hit me that like it's not just these sort of child focused parables about friendliness and family and being nice to one another. Like there is some real emotional shit happening here, and this is about tackling really complex feelings about grief and loss and trauma and treating them like the serious ongoing issues that they are, in that like you don't get over a death in the course of an episode. It will live with you. You don't get over that kind of loss that quickly. And from then on, I took the show far more seriously, and you know, it still manages to delight, but it also has that kernel of truth that I really, really, that really resonates with me in a way I didn't expect.
Listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to put this out there. It was y'all's idea to do this watch, because I just mentioned...
Oh, you said, when are you going to watch Steven Universe?
Yeah. No, I did not.
I was pretty sure you did.
We have receipts.
I was talking about it, and you guys were like, you know, I should watch this sometime. I said, don't mess with me.
We better roll that beautiful bean footage.
Like, okay.
If you're going to, like, don't say you're going to watch this show.
We watched it.
Without meeting it. And then, and then you guys were like, no, let's do it. And I was like, So listeners, gentle listeners, I have heard nothing from these two for the past week or 2 weeks. They've told me, like, almost nothing. So I was just like, oh, Allison's going to start it. Clint's been watching for a while. He said something about, like, liking the beginning. But I have heard nothing. So I just assumed they were like, you know, whatever. It's a fun
show. Should have ambushed her with, we hate it.
It's because I was so busy watching Steven Universe.
There's 150 episodes.
It's a lot of episodes. But you have no idea, listeners, you have no idea how relieved I was when I would just, like, reach out. Like, I don't know if you guys are going to have a chance to, like, catch up with stuff. But, like, there is, like, the end of this big Steven bomb happening. So if you want to watch it, we can do that. And they were like, yes. It's like, oh, yay, they liked it. So it occurs to me, we should probably mention, what is this show about?
Yeah, right. We should do that.
Yes, it's a show created by Rebecca Sugar, who was a storyboard artist on Adventure Time. And I think that's pretty much her big break. And then she got the opportunity to do this other show named Steven Universe. And she left Adventure Time to start that. And there's a lot of parallels between them, where there's like this fantastical world of these, you know, heightened creatures. And there's this childlike sense of play and adventurousness and learning these lessons kind of about growing up. But this is much more family focused and much more serialized in unexpected ways. And yeah, it builds up this entire universe that expects you to pay attention. You need to follow the dense, convoluted continuity. I mean, I say convoluted, but it's not in a bad way. This complex continuity of all the hierarchy of gems and where they fit in and all that stuff. And it's weirdly enough, it kind of feels like a very adult show for kids in that it expects an adult's attention span in a way that's really rewarding once you like get armed with it, you know, and just are great, great endearing characters, beautiful songs. And it's cute in that bittersweet way. It's so beautifully bittersweet. It's the most bittersweet show I think I've seen in a good long time. And I'm just over the moon about it.
How would you, if you were going to nutshell this to someone who had never seen it before?
Yeah, what's
how
the
would
plot?
You describe it? Because I don't remember how you described it to me. Because, like, A, if you tell me to watch something, I take it seriously. And B, I just remember hearing you say, like, songs. And I was like, great. Okay.
That's all what? We need.
Yeah. Okay. So it's about a young boy who's 14, but there's a whole several episodes about this. He looks like he's like 11 or 12, but he's actually 14. And he's being raised by magical space aliens, as far as we're concerned, called the Crystal Gems. And stuff happens. And it's about life, and it's about identity, and it's about grief, and it's about love and loss and the human condition. And it's about all sorts of that and more. Really great. Especially queer representation, queer women representation, women of color, all sorts of different things. But there's these great episodes about consent and loss and grief and happiness and when it's okay to be happy and when you should take a second and consider others and when it's important to not consider others. All this different stuff wrapped up in this beautiful bow. But mostly it's about a young boy and his three, let's say, aunts, his three moms, and his dad getting into wacky space adventures. And hopefully you pick up on all the other stuff that's going on. And if you don't, it's still super fun. And if you do, it's one of the best shows on television for the past 5 years.
In a lot of ways, it kind of feels like a show about co-parenting. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, he obviously has his father, Greg, who we mentioned this also in a lesser show, he would be terrible. Yeah. It would kind of be like what I feared of Schneider. In One Day at a Time, where he would just be like this punchline.
That's a good comparison, although Greg is more finely drawn than Schneider.
Oh, 100%.
Minus like the last four episodes of season two.
Right, but he could have easily just been a jokey side character or treated as a punchline.
Yes.
Like a stereotype of a lazy, deadbeat dad. But like you said, he's very finely drawn. Mm-hmm. He has his own inner story. He has entire episodes dedicated to his life with Rose Quartz and learning how to be a good dad. And also finding the ways to negotiate where his responsibilities lie with the Crystal Gems, mm-hmm. In terms of taking care of Steven and learning when to work it out on their own. And there's a great episode I'm sure we'll get into where he hashes out some very complex emotional issues with one of the gems regarding their previous relationships with Steven's mother, Rose Quartz. And I just love those elements. Like, I think that, you know, as much as it is about Steven growing up, and it largely is, I really like that dynamic about how there's this family, this extended family around Steven that is learning not only how to raise him, but how to be raised and supported by him.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with all of that. Oh, I think one of the great things about it is that it assumes you're intelligent enough to track back 50 episodes and remember when one thing was thematically or emotionally important, to say mm-hmm. nothing of whether or not it was important in the plot. They're pretty good at reminding you about things that are important in the plot, but they really trust that you're going to be able to draw connections between this moment and another moment emotionally. Like, the emotional logic of the show is really sound and very grown up. And I think that that's just,
yeah, lovely. They
it's
trust
a real
you.
Journey.
They trust you to know, like, for example, at the beginning of Mr. Greg, that Greg and Pearl have some unresolved business to take care of, that kind of stuff. And you can intuit it from, because that's the thing. These are Cartoon Network shows. These are Cartoon Network episodes. They're 12 minutes long, so the seasons they seem like they're going to be long because they're like 26 episodes. The first season is 52. It's like two seasons long. But they're only about 10, 11 minutes long per episode. So, I mean, on average, it averages out to, probably a half-decent hour-long season of a show. But even then, they find these great ways to keep the episodes self-contained while also teasing the serialization. I'm thinking especially near the end of season 4 when characters start disappearing and you don't clue in until several episodes later that it's a thing. That kind of smart writing that you do not expect out of like a silly show about a boy and his super powered aunts fighting things with the crystal gems, you know, it's just so smart, and I really appreciate it.
How much do you guys interact with small children? I have a question for you guys.
Rarely, if ever.
Used to be kind of a lot.
Yeah.
Now it's mostly babies. Okay. I used to be a nanny.
Yeah. Have y'all ever talked to an 11-year-old about dinosaurs?
I'm sure I have at some point in my life.
Yeah.
But
they know that shit. They don't have anything else that they need to do. They don't have a job.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
They sure. have school, and during the summer they don't like. They just if they decide they're gonna learn something, they learn everything, and then they ask you a question like, "I know this topic, but you don't," because they live now, so they have some sort of a smartphone or device that they have access to, and they can read everything about it, and they learn everything about it. And the respect this show has for a young viewer's ability to remember everything and mm-hmm. to understand complex mythology is appropriate to what young people are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
But so few shows understand and respect that. They've like the sense that, oh, well, but would a child pick up? Like, yes, the ones I interact with, yes, all the time. If they are into a show like this, they will know the entire mythology better than you could possibly do, because they don't have to deal with rent. They don't have to deal with insurance. They don't have to deal with anything else. They could just, like, you know, watch the show and love it and understand it and feel like it is speaking to them. When I first watched Adventure Time and dove in with it, it made me hopeful about the future of our world, because this was the kind of show that young people were being raised on, and it was teaching them so much about what it meant to be human and to explore yourself and other people and to respect that. And that just is exactly how I feel about Steven Universe. It makes me happy about the future of our planet because people are being raised with this show. Unfortunately, it's not as popular with the young ones as it used to be. But
yeah, I was going to say, like, I guess to that point, maybe this brings up a larger conversation about the way cultural tastes have changed in the last, like, couple decades, where adults especially are less, there's less of a stigma they feel towards enjoying youth-oriented programming. And so to a certain extent, maybe I'm being cynical, but I kind of feel like shows like Adventure Time and Steven Universe are often, like, they feel more like shows, kids shows aimed at adults rather than... So they're aiming more for that adult audience than the kid audience, if that makes sense. And so sometimes I wonder how much kids are picking up on the very complex emotional stuff that's happening in there, as opposed to it's a kid show that expects that a large proportion of people who are watching it are adults watching it unironically.
Oh, no, they definitely pick up on it.
No,
they absolutely pick up on it. And this is something that I don't know if my sister is interested in speaking on this, but she can speak to as someone who works with children all the time and has used Steven Universe in her teaching. But it's something that it's been around for a while, so it's not the hot young thing anymore.
Yeah, that's
sure,
fair.
Exactly. You know,
that's fair.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on this?
No, it's the same thing. I think that, you know, it's similar with Adventure Time. Like, I have a few kids who recognize or follow Adventure Time now. And I think Steven Universe is, like you said, it's just not the newest thing. So, you know, they know it, definitely know that my kids know it more than they know Adventure Time. But I think it's just their attention is getting drawn to newer things mm-hmm. that are coming out.
Mm-hmm. What lessons do you think kids are learning from Steven Universe? Like, what do you think they come away with?
I think they come away with humanity and understanding and a sense of being respected and listened to. I think they come away with messages about consent and identity that are essential, that are not served other places in our public conversation. And I think that they come away with this just the sense of being seen and being heard. How important is it for kids to see representations of identities that you just that are complicated, and it's okay that it's complicated, and everybody this is a show where the for those who don't know Steven Universe, the entire crystal gems or gem like alien species is all female identifying. there are no men. There are female identifying characters. They say she, those pronouns, or them and they. And there, everyone is voiced by either a female identifying or a non-binary voice actor. Did you get to the Jinx episode?
Mm-mm.
There's a Jinx Monsoon episode.
You bet there is.
Yeah, there is. Anyways.
Amazing.
But there is this.
Clint, that's a previous winner of RuPaul's
Drag Race. Oh, okay.
Yes, it's.
I'm
yes.
still a little baby.
Yeah, that's okay. It's unusual and strange and distant enough with things like elements, like, for those who don't know, there's these fusions where gems will fuse together into a new, different form and identity. The aliens, it's just like a part of their. Just, I guess, structure and mm-hmm. biology, as it were.
And yet there's a social stigma attached to it, which also raises some, like, issues of, like, it's marginalization.
It's just distant enough that it doesn't need to be defined in human terms, mm-hmm. but it's something that lots of people could identify with. And the representational impact of that, I think, is huge. And it's very, very intentional from Rebecca Sugar, the creator, and the writers over and storyboard artists over at Steven Universe. It's something that they are constantly striving for. And the conversations that they're having about, like, there's episodes where Steven, like, goes into people's minds without his intent, like, intending to do so. And there's conversations about consent and, like, is it okay that you snooped in on their dreams and then you tried to help them because you had these great intentions, but it's not okay to do that. You know, like, there's all these wonderful conversations that I'm sure may be happening on other shows that I don't watch. But at least they're happening here.
Right. And then there's, you know, like you said, the aforementioned, issues of identity and everything. Like, there's a huge LGBT component to the show, especially with the idea of fusion. It's a huge genderqueer element. I'm thinking specifically, because I mean, it happens with Garnet, but the part where it resonates the most with me, where I sort of gained the most insight, was in the Stevani episodes, where mm-hmm. Steve and his best friend Connie, they fuse, and there's at least, like, one episode in the first season where they just kind of get used to that and get used to feeling different and feeling like they're not quite in step with the rest of the world around them and still figuring that out, figuring out their place. They feel comfortable, but they don't feel comfortable with how other people react to them. And that kind of stuff is really complex and really sensitively handled. And I'm really, really impressed that a show like this would take that level of care towards such sensitive and important issues. And I'm just imagining, like, little boys and girls and non-binary kids, like, looking at that as a reflection of how they feel. And that's so cool.
On a much less important level, that episode is also a great example of something I was so impressed with by the show, which is their willingness to springload something that's going to be revealed, like, 50, 60 episodes later.
Yeah.
Really early to plant a seed and then maybe not refer to it again, maybe, like, hint here and there. And it's not treated like some big twist. It's just information that we don't have yet, but it's been true the whole time. And without spoiling anything, at least in this early part of the conversation for anyone, in this case, the way that one of the characters reacts to that particular fusion feels really significant and important, but you don't understand why for quite a while. And that just, like, filled me with delight.
Yeah.
It was just, when I figured that out, I was like, God, that is so smart! Wow, that is so smart! It was just amazing.
That's pretty great. Well, we've sort of been dancing around in general about the episode, about the show as a whole, but maybe we should hone in on maybe some of the characters that we really, really like. Kate, who are some characters you really like?
All of them? Like, honestly, like, listeners, I've made a list of episodes. Well, you got to watch this one for them, because for our actual hosts here, because I knew that there was a limited time frame. I was like, okay, well, which ones can I cut? And over the 150 episode run, I think I cut, like, 30 or 40?
I think you said you cut 40.
Yeah.
It was really hard because if you have time at some point else.
Oh, I'll go back and watch all of them.
I recommend it, because I cut a bunch of really great Connie stuff and, like, a bunch of other really great episodes. But it was so hard because, first of all, I y'all know me. I was leaving in every episode that had a song.
Well, you also know me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then also all of these characters in this, like Ronaldo is a ridiculous character, and he's like, I think I cut the Keep Beach City Weird episode, which is just his like vlog that he has.
Yeah.
You did cut that one, but I'm already
in. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to love it. But this is like the care and respect for each of these characters, even the most ridiculous, to the detriment of the show, they do like a unfortunate for me, at least, try to be friends with Trumpers kind of episode for Thanksgiving, in the one of the more recent seasons. But the care and respect they have for everybody in this extended world is tremendous, and it's something that is really lovely to see. It's hard to pick a favorite character. It's hard to pick a favorite crystal gem. I'm going to go with Pearl because I have to. And also Garnet and also Amethyst and also everybody. But like, if I have to
pick one. And Steven.
If I have to pick one, I'm going to go with Pearl. But they're all great. Like, I care about Onion. Weird little creepy Onion. I care about him. But I'm very interested in how
I care about Sour Cream.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious what you guys think about it, because obviously I've loved the show for quite a while and I've been following it very closely. Where are you guys at with these characters?
I mean, I'm kind of with you. I think it's a reflection of the show being so positive and pluralistic. The idea that, I mean, because the show starts off with basically four crystal gems, right? I mean, there's a Garnet, Amethyst, and Pearl, and Steven. But over the course of the show, that family grows in a way that, I mean, it absolutely is purposeful, where you're just sort of seeing the impact that this positive, cohesive family has on the community around them, to the point where everyone wants to be not just like them, but to be them, to be part of that family. So you get Peridot, you get Lapis, you get Connie, like officially joining the Crystal Gems. And even, like I said, like half the villains on the show end up becoming good guys. And that's like one of the few cases where it doesn't feel forced. It just feels like a testament to how inclusive and, again, pluralistic the show is, that the show loves its characters so much to give them all their moment in the sun, several moments in the sun, and to explore them all in ways that don't make Steven not feel like the main character still. There's at least, pick a character, throw a stone, and you'll hit a character that has at least one or two great episodes about them.
First, not counting this week's Steven Bomb, you cut 41 episodes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a lot.
Slightly more than a fifth.
But it's not very much. If you're trying to get someone to catch up on 150 episodes,
it's not much of a short list.
To 105 before this week.
Yeah.
I did as good as I could. Because I didn't want to watch it when I was multitasking, and some of them I did, but then I was constantly pausing and going back. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, I watched Tiger Millionaire 3 times.
Same with me, Mr. Greg.
Yeah, that one really made me giggle.
Listeners, Tiger Millionaire is the episode all about how Amethyst and Steven have, like, they moonlight as wrestlers in, like, the local, like, circuit of pro wrestling, and it's a whole thing, but it's lovely.
Maybe that's lovely. A good way to delve into the character thing. Like, what character? Because we've already agreed that, like, most of the single characters we just love. What character pairings do you think you really resonate with?
Oh, I want to talk about our favorite characters. We can do that.
Yeah.
Too,
oh, absolutely. Like, sure. Yeah. Sure.
I mean, I want to.
Oh no, please.
I'm doing that.
Yeah. Just please.
So we're clear.
I do not mean.
I mean, I love all of them. I'm like you. I think they are all great, but like you, if you had to pick, you have to pick Pearl. And if I have to pick, I have to pick Garnet. I am obsessed with Garnet. I can't take it. It's like significant. I've passed the like smiling ear to ear and the giggling in delight to full on cackle. Like I'm just cackling with glee or like having my heart broken. And I think that you're absolutely right that all of the you like throw a stone and you hit a character with at least one great episode. That's absolutely true. And I can think of episodes I loved that are Amethyst centric, that are Pearl centric, certainly that are Steven centric. I also really love Greg and I love Connie and like I'm
like
really
there's a Lars Peridot. Episode I love.
Like I'm just I just am really on board with pretty much all of them. But the ones that I have thought about the most in the, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks, I've been slowly picking away at the show, are all Garden episodes. I just love her. And some of that is probably recency bias because we just finished watching this last episode of the Stephen Bond. Yeah. But I just love her. I love her.
Have you gotten to Mindful Education yet?
I am really bad with episode titles.
The Here Comes the Thought song?
No. Great.
We have such things to show you.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I had to pick a character, I would probably, especially of the main ensemble, I mean, I think I would have to pick Steven, not just because, you know, oh, it's the boy picking the boy character in a show that's very heavily female-centric. But I think Steven is also really important in terms of, like, teaching. I've been really sensitive lately of, like, positive male roles for men, like, teaching ways, you know, to sort of disarm toxic masculinity and that kind of stuff. And I feel like Steven is like the perfect little boy to like engender a sense of community and belonging and inclusiveness. Mm-hmm. And he's always so positive and he always finds the sunny side in things, but is also very honest with his emotions when they are negative and is always so willing to communicate. He's such a good communicator. And even in the episodes where he's bad at communicating, like when he wants Connie to stay away because he doesn't want her to get hurt, that episode broke my heart because you can tell how much he wants. And it's just, it's him, every episode is him striving to become a better person. And I think we need shows like that, and it's such an endearing performance. I personally enjoy shows where the first season is very clearly he's voiced by a kid who's not yet hit. It's just very clearly like it's a fun thing when you hear a voice actor who hasn't yet hit puberty and you hear him like sort of like go through it as the series progresses. Mm-hmm. I just think it's really cute too.
Yeah, at Comic-Con I've gone to several fabulous Steven Universe panels with my sister here, and obviously the highlight is the Mr. Greg all musical like extravaganza that it was awesome. But they're asking Zach Ellison, who voices Steven, you know, talk about things like, yeah, I can't sing all the songs because puberty is a thing. So I can't sing all the songs anymore, but it's pretty great.
I love it.
There's one thing we're gonna go take a little ad break in a second here, but there's one thing I want to make to one of your points.
Sure.
One thing I'd like to say. Supergirl tries really hard and sometimes succeeds to make her the superhero who wants to assume that there's good in people and that she could just talk to them. And if she can talk to them, then maybe they can find common ground and not be the bad guy anymore. And they sometimes get there. Steven Universe pulls it off every time.
Yeah.
I believe it every time.
Yeah.
Every time when he's like, why don't we just like, I want to understand what they're feeling and I want, and every time it works. I can't believe it. Maybe that isn't true from after where I'm at.
No, it's still true.
That's a miracle.
It was true in the episode we watched tonight. Yeah.
Let's take an 11-minute break and watch Tiger Millionaire again, and then be right back.
And we're back talking about more Steven Universe. We've already talked about some themes and stuff. We talked about some characters we like. What are some episodes? What's the best kind of Steven Universe episode for you? Like, what kind of Steven Universe episode really resonates with you?
I'm curious to know, like, what, and granted we haven't seen all of it, Clint has seen more than I have.
Mm-hmm.
But and I do want to talk about like our platonic ideals of a Steven Universe episode,
sure,
I think
yeah.
That's a really interesting question. But what I want to know is like what episodes or storylines you're curious about to people who had no idea what they were getting into, because I literally knew this was animated and there was music in it and that was the extent of my information. And I think I knew that there was a lot of really great positive LGBTQIA representation, but I think that was like that may have slightly permeated my consciousness and that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to know like what you're curious about as a person who knows the show intimately to two complete and total noobs.
It's really hard for me to pick a favorite episode, and I was thinking about that earlier today as we were like getting ready to record, and what I just kept coming back to are two that I know the titles of. Many of these I do not know the titles of. You've done me the title, be like, oh yeah, that one's really good. But I know Jailbreak, and I know Mr. Greg. And it was shock all of our listeners. Kate likes the musical episode. Like, I'm shocked and astonished. But I thought it was a beautiful episode, really fun, really energetic, well done. Like, there are a lot of musical episodes out there. I think this is among the better that we've seen on TV, and so that one obviously comes right to mind. Jailbreak, I don't think I'll ever forget, because we did on the AV Club, Allison, one of those, like, best of the year so far lists, you know, like, about this time of the year, several years back, like many years back. And one of the comments was, oh, I mean, I thought that, you know, if anybody, if you could would have Jailbreak, you guys, like, it's ridiculous that you are overlooking this show. And I registered somewhat at the time, but certainly later when I understood what that meant, which episode that was, which of course has Garnet's amazing song Stronger Than You in it. And I was like, oh, they were right. I watched it a few months later. I was like, yeah, definitely that should have been on my list for things. And the way, like, there's so many different types of Steven Universe episodes, and part of what I love about the show is that it is so happy to embrace these different types of episodes. It has this really dense mythology, but it also will just go on a lark with Onion into the woods with his friends, just because, why not? With his weird, awkward friends, and the point of the message is, yes, some people are awkward, and that's okay.
Garbanzo!
Exactly, exactly. And those episodes are great. And then it does these episodes about, you know, like the, we already mentioned Kiki's Delivery Service, like where we get into the psychology of a supporting character, like a supporting character of a supporting character in the larger world. And that episode is beautiful and awesome. And then we have Alone at Sea, which is another one that I remember. I believe that's the title, which is Lapis's episode, which is basically about, hey, abusive relationships are bad, and they're complex, and it's not always one person's fault, but it doesn't mean that it's healthy. And all of those are great. I find myself looking forward to mythology episodes.
Alone at Sea is correct.
Thank you. I find myself looking forward to mythology episodes because of the payoff of seasons of viewing, but the fact that the show's still in its fifth season and in what feels like it may be approaching an end, who knows? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I still look forward to those more, but I love that the show seemingly is committed to explorations outside of the main thrust of the plot and never really abandoning all these other characters. They're just as interested, again, in Onion, as they are in some of the Crystal Gems.
Well, Onion's beautiful. Got layers.
Hey-o.
What's up, 20-year-old joke?
What about you guys?
Allison, now you're recovering from my terrible pun.
It hurt.
I know.
That one hurt. My eyes are stinging. Oh! There we go. Now we're even.
I love it.
I also really love Jailbreak. I've mentioned Tiger Millionaire a couple of times now. Mr. Greg, obviously. I was very into the first Peridot arc. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to find the title of it. But the episode that's titled with the name of one of her logs, where you sort of see her coming around on all of the gems specifically, individually, and then how she ends up starting to understand Garnet better.
Through the power of fanfic.
Really?
You don't know that?
No.
There's the whole, like, the TV show that they want. Okay.
There's a reason Tumblr loves this show. Like, yeah. It celebrates fanfic.
Yeah, she comes to understand.
Oh, of course, with the diagrams and
Pierre
stuff.
Pierre
yeah.
and, yeah. But, like, the
Polly or something
the,
like
the
that.
The shipping mm-hmm. that yeah. she gets into. Yeah.
Log dates 7152.
Yeah.
When Future Vision pays off at the end and he's listening to the audio and yeah, just, I really loved that one. Let's see. God, what else? I don't know. I just fucking.
All of them?
All of them. I'm in a similar place to you.
Yeah.
Whatever the name of the one is where he discovers the lion dimension and finds the tape and watches it.
Yeah. It's Lion 3. Yes. Something.
Lion 2, Lion 3?
Yeah. Is there a Lion 1 and 2? Because I only know Lion 3 and Lion 4.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a whole Lion series.
Full disclosure, too, where he mm-hmm. can't bring himself to tell Connie what happened.
Right. Yeah, that's another great one. And in a similar vein, I think the episodes that resonate the most with me are the ones that just like, you know, the mythology is great and all, but like I love the episodes where you just sit down with the characters and check in on how they're feeling. Especially in the wake of some of these big mythology-shattering events. Like, even in the fifth season, learning the truth about Rose Quartz and, you know, going to the Steven Bomb, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, we will... That particular spoilery thing we will not talk about until we start talking about the Stephen Baum. So if you're on the fence about watching the show or you haven't caught up yet, that like major reveal at the last break.
Single Pale Rose is
the episode. We'll give you some time stamps until we get to
talking about the Stephen Baum.
Right. But even just like things like that where major events in the mythology happen and then Stephen will sit down with someone like Amethyst and have really hard conversations and sort of just like talk honestly about how they're feeling. And then I think especially for some reason, the Greg flashback episodes really resonate with me. Absolutely. Just like learning, like seeing.
Well, the stories, because so many of them are in the form of stories that he's telling his son.
Yeah.
This mother that he'll never get to meet. And I just think that's beautiful.
Like even the one that's just like, what was it? Three Gems and a Baby. Where it's the first time that they really sort of all hang out as a unit, and Amethyst is even still getting used to the idea that that's not Rose anymore, and Greg is learning how to be a dad to not just a baby but a gem baby, and has to learn how to like not cover up the gem in the gem jammies so it can breathe. Just him learning how to be a dad, because Greg is such a character that's, again, like in an objective sense he's kind of a fuck up, but in that sense, he's also very endearing, and especially the ways that, like, Mr. Greg brings up, where, like, yeah, he sort of lucks into a lot of money, and that solves a lot of plot problems, but that doesn't, you didn't even need really that development. He's just happy the way he is, and that's really the more important lesson. Like, he's not a deadbeat, he just knows exactly what who he wants to be, and that is a really important lesson for him and Steven. And like having those emotional episodes, not just for the boys of the group, but even, you know, Garnet and Amethyst and Pearl and everybody, those are just, I love those. I love that kind of emotional intelligence in a children's show.
How'd you like his Virgin Mary Dragon, Three Gems and a Baby? And then his bridal gown in Mr. Greg.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
It's wonderful. It's just great. Like, what other show would do that? What other show would position the father as the Virgin Mary and the three gems as the wise men, and then would put Pearl in the tux and puts Greg in the white bathrobe.
Right. For their dance. In a way that doesn't infantilize them either. It's not like they're helpless. It's just they're learning how to be a community and like respecting when some characters have knowledge and insight that the others don't. And instead of taking that as a personal slight or something, or an insecurity, that they just open up and learn from them.
Listeners, if you have money and movie theater and connections and time and my email address, email me if you want Kate and Clint and I to program a Poe's Steven Universe mini film festival about Chosen Family. We'll throw in some RuPaul's Drag Race. We'll throw in some Golden Girls.
Oh my God.
Yes.
We will throw in what else? We'll throw in a single episode of Full House. We'll throw in some Gilmore Girls. Mm-hmm. That'll work. We will throw in some good things.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll do a little Chosen Family mini TV / film festival. But you have to pay us money.
Please? It's hard out here for us freelancers.
Anyway.
Yes. But those kinds of episodes are the ones that resonate the most.
Are there, question for you, Kate, are there, as a person who follows the show, episodes that are widely considered like the top tier, like the sort of acknowledged cornerstone episodes or cream of the crop episodes?
I'm gonna be honest here. I avoid the Steven Universe fan base because, like,
I've heard some toxic things about it.
There's some real toxic stuff going on. Like, there's some really great, beautiful, wonderful stuff, but there's also like sections of the fan base sending hate mail and death threats, and you should just go kill yourself to Jinx Monsoon, because how dare a non-binary person voice a character? They should all be, like, the gem should all be
Jinx
female.
Is non-binary.
Yes, but how dare a non-binary person? It should be a female identifying voice for every single gem. There's been some really, really messed up stuff that's gone down. So I, like, with some of, like, fan art and other stuff like that, too.
People who, like, don't draw Rose Quartz as plus size, like, get you know, corralled off the internet, basically.
Yeah. There's been some really messed up stuff. So perhaps then I avoid that.
Well, not fan perspective then, but like, if If you were to read, not write, but read a list of the 25 best Steven Universe episodes, are there episodes that you would expect, just assume, would be in the top five?
Yeah, there are. There are certain ones that are big culmination episodes, like Jailbreak. There are ones that are big thematic and particularly effective stylistic episodes. Something like Mindful Education, I think, is a really terrific episode. I look forward to Allison when you've seen it. Because it's very, it's again, the stylistic choices for that work really, really well. There are ones that have a bunch of references to anime that I don't know about that would pop up. And certainly anything that's a big arc episode or a big like musical episode, maybe we can use that to pivot into our next discussion.
I get the impression that Lion 3 is also like talked about a lot.
There are certain ones that, because it's a conversation fans have been waiting for, because it's a like A Single Pale Rose is a fantastic episode that really delves into Pearl and her identity and her personality, and also has this bombshell revelation at the end of the episode. But the whole episode before that is also just this gorgeous look at layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of Pearl and who she is and why she is the way that she is and so much more. So there are a handful that I would expect to see on any list. But I think because this is such a show that embraces the personal and the specific, I think you would be, I think there's a second tier that you would see chosen from that anything in a, like a wide, like 30 episodes could be in that second tier. And you go like, oh yeah, that's a good one. And it would depend on the specific perspective and priorities of the person making the list. But yeah, there's definitely like I would say like a top tier. I can't think of all of them in the moment. But there are certain ones that feel very, like, just very climactic for the show's mythology.
Nice. Well, you mentioned before that the show has some great music, so maybe this is a good time to talk about.
Hold on. I've been saving this. I've been saving for this moment. Yeah, let's talk about music.
All right. Kate, we brought you here. Yeah. Talk about the music. How much do you love the music of Steven Universe?
Give us, like, mini primer, the things we should be thinking about when we're thinking about this music.
Yeah.
You should be thinking about influences. You should be thinking about voice leading, and you should be thinking about instrumentation. You should be thinking about like Garnet, for example. They started with the melody for Garnet, and then the composers, Ivy and Sarashi, find out later that she's a fusion. Spoiler alert, I guess. So they had to deconstruct then two different melodies from her pre-existing melody to be like the, you know, there's all of this wonderful stuff. The things that I always think of with the music are so much of it is designed around accessibility, at least in my perspective. And certainly Steven, he plays the uke, his dad plays the guitar, his dad is a musician. But so much of the early music on the show is designed to be immediately catchy and singable, and to be in very violin friendly keys, which is handy for me as a violinist, because the ukulele is like very violin friendly key signature wise. But it's this really emotional music that so often just sneaks up on you and surprises you. And it's like music like Pearl's torch song from Mr. Greg, is It's Over, Isn't It? Mm-hmm. And she just keeps holding these pitches. Like the middle section has some back and forth and some turmoil, but like the main melody has these repeated pitches over and over because she is stuck. And she can't move on. And you would expect, if you were just going to write a torch song, that it would go up to this high pitch and then come down. And it never does, because she can't. There's an awareness of the characters, of the power of, when you're writing a melody, what you can do by subverting expectations, that makes it really satisfying to listen to. And it just not very different than what you might expect, but just a little bit different than what you might expect. And it's as a musician, it's incredibly satisfying, and it's also all very earwormy.
Are there any like particular standout tracks for you that?
No, I love them all. Yes, there are. But like even something like that, I like, you know, we were listening. My sister and I were listening to the soundtrack for season one of Steven Universe in the car on the way here, and like the song that Greg and Steven sing with their relationship, like about like these memories Steven has of his dad growing up, and
Dear
then
old dad.
Dear Old Dad is the name of the song. Yes, thank you. And they very intentionally give Steven one melody, and then they give Greg another melody, which of course line up so that when they put them together, it's just this gorgeous counter melody with each other. But Steven's starts high, goes low, and then ends going back up. It ends with this like questioning and like this hopeful and like what's going to come next. And Greg starts low, goes high, meaning like the influence of Steven as, you know, in his life. And then it comes back down like this resignation to it, while always being filled with a hopefulness for the power of their relationship and how much it means to both the two of them. I mean, like it's easy to point to songs like Stronger Than You, which is such a beautiful song and so incredibly mm-hmm. impactful. It's easy to point to something like It's Over, Isn't It? Mindful Education. I just love so many of them. But what I keep coming back to with Steven Universe is the care that is given to every one of the songs. When they're going to do, they recently had a Ruby song recently, which was the first time we saw that. They, not that long ago, gave Lapis her first song. I didn't really care about Paradise Island until they gave her a song. And I was like, oh, that's what it took. This is love on the planet Earth. And there's some selfish in there. So, you know, I love that too. But yeah, it's just this awareness of the power of music, which of course, as a musician, is something that speaks to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, one thing I love about the songs is kind of how adorably unpolished they are, because it's very clear that Rebecca Sugar and Ed et al. Are very accomplished musicians, and they are complex and carry their message very clearly in the ways you described, but they also don't feel that showy. Like, they don't feel too showy. They don't feel inaccessible. They're still conveyed, especially with like Zach Callison's his vocals and
Tom Sharp
playing, of course. Everybody, and so like the characters who are very polished in their presentation, like Pearl, that comes through. But then like sometimes they are just these cute little ditties that still convey a lot of character and are still really, like you said, earwormy and catchy. I still love all of them. Yeah.
Lil Butler.
I am very excited about the number of people who have done voices on the show who are musicians who I have not heard sing yet.
Yeah.
Can I tell listeners? Like, I got a text from Allison. It's like, I was watching it. I felt like this sounded like Estelle. And then I was like, oh, it is Estelle. I was like, oh, Allison. There's so much more.
I have no idea.
And that was way before she did any singing outside of the theme. It was like she hadn't done any singing yet. And I was like, this just sounds like, it sounds like American Boy. It's wild. This person is doing a great Estelle impression. And then I was like, I wonder who it is. And then it was fucking Estelle.
Yeah.
Like, great. Okay, cool. And I was very proud when I was like, wow, that sounds like Nicki Minaj. And then it was Nicki Minaj. I was very proud of myself that time. But we were talking as we were watching this Steven Baum, a character shows up. And I don't know if it's a spoiler that she shows in this episode or not. So I won't say who she is, but who is voiced by a Scottish singer-songwriter, Irish singer-songwriter.
I think it's Irish.
Irish, that I really like, called Lisa Hannigan. So I was very excited to ask whether or not that character had gotten any songs yet, and she has not. They told me, I haven't gotten there yet, but they told me Patti LuPone has a song mm-hmm. coming, which I'm extremely excited about.
It's a little Sondheim-y.
Yeah.
Oh, extremely.
Patter? Is there patter?
It's so pattery.
I love it. Great.
There's wordplay.
I'm very excited about all of that. Amy Mann. Like, bring Amy Mann back and give her a musical number, please. I want all of those things to happen.
Kate Micucci does a voice. I don't remember if she's done a song on the show. Yeah.
Sadie has a whole thing.
That's right.
She starts fronting a band. So that's in your future.
Her little pop song that she doesn't sing at the...
Olivia Colman sings it, who you'll know as voicing... listeners may know as voicing Marceline on Adventure Time and singing that.
Does... Oh, no, I meant that she doesn't end up performing it. Like, I'm talking about the plot. That she doesn't do it.
The original is voiced... of the song within the show is sung by Olivia Colman, who voices Marcy on Adventure Time and sings as Marcy on that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. More connections. Well, that was a very catchy little song.
Yeah.
God, I like all of it.
That's a really good series of songs.
Yeah. We need to mention Dee Dee Magno-Hall, who voices Pearl, and again, some listeners will know as being in the original Broadway cast of Miss Saigon.
Oh.
Yeah. She's very, very good. And they and something that you had mentioned, Cliff, they know where they're like, holy crap, you've got a really good singer in your cast, is. And that doesn't, and I was mentioning to my sister earlier today, that doesn't stop them from writing really beautiful music for people they have who aren't singers, who aren't great singers, but they still write gorgeous melodies for them. So just because they can't...
They can carry a tune.
They can carry a tune. Just because they can't do, like, a full, like, the most gorgeous iteration of this you've ever heard, the most polished, the most rounded, the most full-throated, with great breath support, doesn't mean that they are going to, like, phone it in for those songs. Those songs still have really beautiful melodies, and if you listen to someone who was more of a singer, they would sound even better. But...
And the rougher edges can contribute to those songs.
Yeah, but the point is that they convey the emotion, and that's always what comes first in the show.
If you had to pick, if it was like,
oh, shit.
Kate, if you can pick, if you can really think deeply and decide definitively without, at least for how you feel right now, without hedging, and you have to pick one, and then you get, like, I don't know, $1 million or a pony or both. what would you pick? And I'm going to do the same for you. And then also the same for me. I'm taking the pony.
Okay.
Just so everybody knows.
Okay. If I had to pick one, it would be, I would have to go with Stronger Than You just for the empowerment of it. But I'm going to throw a shout out to Be Wherever You Are, because I think that last line pivot in the very end, it just like punches you right in the gut. And if you didn't see it coming like I didn't when I first saw it, it just like insty tears. But I would have to go Stronger Than You.
What about you, Quinn?
If I have to go for the thing that'll engender the most tears, I'd probably have to do It For Her.
Oh, no, your favorite.
Oh, my favorite.
Your favorite.
Well, my absolute favorite has to be It's Over, Isn't It? I think the Torch song is just beautiful. If it's not, maybe Love Like You. I just really love the way that song evolves over the course of the end credits. Like, the end credits have their own progression of their own song, where like new verses keep getting added on to this song, and then it becomes this entire thing, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, also It's Over, Isn't It? Is just a great song.
The only Rebecca Sugar song, when it's deployed in Bubble, right? Bubbled. And it's the only time she's had her voice in the show is that time. It's great.
Yeah, it is great. And then, but then I just have a huge soft spot for Do For Her, for the way in which it's about two people who are trying to do their best to, like, serve the people they love in the way that they can. And there's, like, a line that Pearl says, or I think Connie says, where she's like, I will protect him. I will be his knight. And it makes me it makes me choke up every time I hear it.
That was a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to repeat, but also I don't care. So if I'm not repeating, I think I would say Don't Cost Nothing, which was so earwormy and catchy, but also just like incredibly sweet.
Yeah.
But Stronger Than You is so good. We got to that point. We got to that point and my mind just went, like, that was it. I was just done. I just kind of sat there and was like, all right, but like, my pleasure centers have short-circuited. I am no longer a person. I need to, like, retreat into my little shard and, like, regenerate for 2 weeks and then come back. We could put some Doctor Who in our film festival, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's that blew my mind. I couldn't believe that. I would listen to that. Like, that should just be on the radio, and then we just don't tell anyone what it's from. Or we do, but not until after they've listened to it.
Right. Like, just to remove the stigma that it's from a kid's show.
Yeah. Well, so people just assume it's a pop song.
Yeah.
Which it is. But so they're just like, oh, this is good. When did Estelle come out with a new record? And then it's, you know, we getcha.
She's been working on it for 5 years. It's called Steven Universe.
Oh, it's so good.
It's real, real good.
Does this Estelle do other voice acting? Is this like another facet of her career I just didn't know about?
I mean, I'm just thinking of other songs I really like. I still love like Giant Woman. I think Giant Woman is really cute. Mm-hmm. Let Me Drive My Van Into Your Heart is really neat. Yeah.
Oh, I liked On the Run, too.
Mm-hmm. On the Run is also good. Empire City is like, you know, it's a little like, I just love that Empire City is not New York City, but it still has Brooklyn and the Bowery. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's funny. Yeah.
Strong in the Real Way. I like Strong in the Real Way.
Oh, Strong in the Real Way is really good.
Anyway. Patty.
We're already at the Chris Farley Show. Maggie, do you have a favorite song?
I like the one that Greg sings to Baby Steven. I was never...
I could never be ready.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I can never be ready. Yeah. I love that
Yeah, Insty Tears again.
He could never be ready to be a dad, but he's going to do it. He's going to do the best he can.
Well, and it's also being ready to be a dad, but without his partner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Greg.
That episode where they fuse, but they don't fuse. They just have a conversation.
Yeah.
Insty tears, is that the term? Insty tears.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really got me.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be the point if you are now thinking, man, I need to go watch Steven Universe, where you're going to want to skip ahead to the next timestamp, because mm-hmm. now we're going to talk about the Steven bomb for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Everybody good with that?
Kate, what is a Steven bomb?
A Steven bomb is a set of episodes that are aired rather than weekly, are aired a bunch in a row on one day or day to day. So like this past week as we record, there's been a new episode every day. Today as we record, there was a double episode that aired today. Last summer, for example, they did Summer of Steven. There was a new episode like every single day for a month. It was awesome. and the show will go away for who knows how long. Like this last time, it was not gone that long, but it felt like forever because of the single Pale Rose cliffhanger. And we just knew it was coming back in the summer. And apparently that meant the beginning of July. I didn't know that. I was like, June counts as summer. Nothing. But so Steven bombs happen every now and again. They promote them as information becomes available and the young people just are on top of this shit. So they're not Cartoon Network.
The youngins.
Doesn't worry. But that's what a Steven bomb is. The show, I think, tremendously benefits from that release schedule as opposed to every week one 10-minute episode. So if you get like a sort of off-kilter episode that is more just like world building and an adventure with someone you haven't spent some time with in a while, it doesn't feel like you're being somehow robbed of the larger stakes or your favorite character because there's going to be another episode tomorrow. And I think it was probably very beneficial. It seems to me it was very beneficial for them to figure out that release schedule or model. For animation, it's always a bit of a, you know, they have to make everything.
Yeah,
they have to make everything so much earlier so they can have the writing time. But that's what a Steven bomb is. We had a Steven bomb this week. I'm very curious what you guys thought about it, having some of the gaps filled in, but not all of them. Did you guys get to Single Pale Rose?
Mm-mm. That was long spoiled for me.
Okay.
I think I knew that before I understood what any of it meant.
Ah.
Like, I feel like that was one of those things that kind of went up into like high enough in the stratosphere of its particular fandom that it penetrated the ozone and like then carbon dioxide started whatever doesn't
and matter. There are events from the Steven bomb that did the same for me too, where there were articles about the proposal between Ruby and Sapphire about like how that was a huge leap forward for LGBTQ representation, about like a children's show where two women got engaged to be married, and like that's pretty much it. Feels weird that because the Steven bomb, you would expect it to be more about the fallout of the Rose Quartz reveal that she was Pink Diamond and she just faked her death kind of and then reconstituted into Rose Quartz to start a new life. But only really like the first couple episodes is about that. And then it becomes about the wedding, which I don't necessarily mind. But it was interesting that like this huge thing was wrapped up in a couple episodes, especially given how short the episodes are.
Yeah, my sister and I have thoughts.
Yeah.
On that.
Please share them.
We are not big fans of that choice.
Uh-huh.
Because this is the kind of stuff that normally they would give each character several episodes to deal with. And instead they're like, everybody's great by the end of the episode, because by the end of the week we need to be able to be at this place. And I don't know if they have a limited episode order or if they're, you know, being worried about cancellation or something, but yeah. We weren't big fans. Do you have any thoughts, Nick?
Well, it just felt, when we were talking about that, like this episode today, which was the title?
Reunited,
which felt like, for me watching it, felt like a more return to like what felt normal for a pace for the show. But the four episodes up to this, it was such a big, I mean, I've watched The Single Pale Rose several times because I know something about it is just really interesting. I like those episodes where they go back and you see the mythology kind of explained and get glimpses into that. And so then the four episodes this week have just, to me, felt kind of anticlimactic and just rushed. That was so important, and then everything's fine. I mean, I don't need dramas for drama's sake, and I don't appreciate drama just for drama's sake, just to have conflict. So I'm not saying that, but it's like, why, like, you made, like, the show made this out to be such a big deal, and then it was like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's
fine. Yeah, I kind of feel like Bismuth when she gets awoken and she's like, why aren't you guys more freaked out about this? And like, I kind of feel like that's me right now. It's like, this should be a bigger deal, but we are just kind of wallpapering over it. Yeah. Like, Bismuth like gets this huge existential crisis upon immediately waking up, which, by the way, I had no idea that Bismuth was Uzo Aduba, which is great. She wakes up and she has this huge crisis of conscience, really, or like just this crisis of faith where she realizes that everything she thought she knew was upended, and it feels like she has more of an emotional journey to go on than Steven does about his own mother, which is odd. Like, and I did appreciate the scenes that he has with Amethyst, especially when they're at the pizza place, and Amethyst is just, or Steven is even just like checking in on Amethyst and is like, are you okay? What's going on? And Amethyst, like, actually, it's a great moment where she's like, no, like, I'm freaking out, but I'm not allowing myself to freak out because you deserve to be more freaked out than I am.
Because you're a child and I'm an adult.
Yes.
I have some sense, at least, of boundaries.
Right. And I love that realization that that Steven basically says, like, Amethyst, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think you're the most mature gem. Right now. And she's like, yeah, I guess I am. That's weird. But that's a testament to how like subtle the emotional growth is of these characters on this children's show, which is really fascinating. But yeah, I agree that the structure of the Steven bomb has been very interesting because you'd think it would feel more like a 5-episode event given how they're structuring it. But it feels like it's like sort of truncated into a few like couple episode chunks. Yeah, it's odd.
I only saw the last one, so I've only seen the wedding, Reunited. But I found that very satisfying. That, for me, I was like, oh, this is great. The lawyer was like, this is so good. I can't wait to understand what's happening here.
Yeah.
So I can't speak to the rest of it, but I thought, like, at least this sort of last chapter, this double size chapter, was pretty effective. Was that your experience too?
I like the last one that we just watched. I like that. That felt a lot more familiar and a lot more comfortable for me. So it's just the four leading up to it. I guess after you get the latest chapter, then the four leading up to it, you're like, okay. But still, again, it's like, this was such a big deal. And then it's like, and for Bismuth as well, it was.
Have you seen Bismuth's first episode?
Nope.
That's in season 4, I think. Yeah.
Cut. But like for that, it was like, yeah, a crisis for like 2 seconds. And then it was like, nah, we're fine.
Sapphire was okay way too quickly.
I think all of them were, which is just a little.
Except Amethyst. She's not okay yet, and that's good.
But still, you know, in compared to how they've dealt with things in the past, it seems like that was a real quick turnaround on something that should have been like one of the biggest reveals. The biggest reveal in the series.
I will say one of the things I did like about this, the big like sort of two-parter wedding episode, is it highlighted an element that I really like of the show that we actually haven't talked about a lot, which is just the visual style and the animation. Like even just the character design is just so phenomenal. you know, it's also a bit of a mission statement for like this new expanded version of the Crystal Gem family too, because they all play a part. Even Connie, even Lapis, even Peridot, like they all play a part in defeating Blue Diamond to a certain extent. And then even in this last segment, it becomes dreamlike and subjective and presentational in a way that, like, you know, you see off and on in Steven Universe episodes, but like to do it in something as big and plot heavy and like consequential as this feels novel.
Yeah, when Lapis showed up, yeah. I mean, did you guys notice? I was like, oh shit, because like
it was a big step.
Despite any qualms I've had about this latest Steven bomb, I did not expect Lapis to show up because of what we had seen with her most recently, and the respect given her trauma and her PTSD and her desire to stand with her friends, but her inability to do it because of her trauma, because her thousands of years of trauma. And so to see her show up felt completely in character and justified, but also like I never would have hoped for that. Mm. It's so impactful, it's so powerful, and it's so beautiful. And so yeah,
I can confirm that Kate went, oh shit.
Yeah. It's great. There are witnesses. Yeah.
I mean, this ties more into the themes than it does into the art, but seeing two women get married and kiss on the mouth.
Yeah.
Like, clearly, unequivocally, kiss on the mouth in, like, a passionate way. Not a peck, not a loving embrace, not a sort of pan
it
away.
It is a romantic kiss, which feels rare even for, like, heterosexual couples on, like, children's shows, too. Like, that doesn't happen all that often. So, like, the fact that they were able to, they were willing to embrace it in this context as well was cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very nice. It's a very lovely wedding.
Also,
everyone wore
that blue tux.
Ooh. Oh my god, those tuxes!
Good. They've got good looks and they've got great hair on this show.
Yeah, Taryn looks.
They gave Ruby the dress. That made me so happy. Mm-hmm. And not to say that there's anything wrong with the representation of her is usually being the like if you're going to use
the more masculine one.
The more masculine, the more butch of the two of them, always. Because Sapphire is always the one in the gown, and my sister is. Cosplayed as Sapphire, she looked fabulous.
Oh, I bet you did.
But again, that decision that like apparently to Ruby it was important to be in a white dress and to be the one in the dress of the two of them. If only one of them, and you know that they could have easily done two dresses or two tuxes, but they chose to do it that way. It was just lovely.
It's so nice.
And Steven did a good job officiating.
Yeah, he did.
I'm going to be taking notes. I can't decide whether to take more inspiration from this wedding or the Sense8 wedding or my impending wedding. Because there was a great wedding in Sense8.
Is this the best TV wedding of the year so far?
No, Sense8 still is a better wedding.
Don't make me pick between this and Sense8. Because okay. I don't want to pick something other
if you haven't seen
universe,
the finale,
but...
those are some of the best wedding vows you could ever ask for.
I'm a This Is Us fan, but this one smokes the This Is Us wedding.
Yeah.
Nice. Just smokes it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Smokes.
Do we have any other thoughts on the Steven bomb?
Y'all should watch Steven Universe. Is my final thought.
Yeah,
on Steven Universe.
Yeah.
These two, like, you know, listen to them, right? Like 2 weeks ago, they hadn't seen it, and they're like over the moon. So
he really jabs a thumb at us like she's a New York cabbie.
I'll tell you this, and this will to a like a certain. type of person, this is going to be off-putting, and I would ask you to ignore it because I'm not speaking to you. I'm speaking to the people who caught the Rent reference earlier in this episode. I am very delighted to now be able to say when people say, how come Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is the only musical on television? To say, like, well, it's not. There's another really great one. And the music is really amazing. And not all the episodes are musical episodes, and not all the songs take the form of songs from a musical. It's not all like a song expressing a feeling that couldn't otherwise be expressed in words or whatever, but man, when it decides to go into that mode, it's really, really good at it.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing we didn't even touch on, like, that I just want to mention real quick is we mentioned how awesome the show is for LGBTQ representation, but also, like, weirdly great body positivity
in
the show.
Oh,
yeah, like what Rose Quartz and Amethyst are plus sized. I mean, even like, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, it doesn't matter, but like Steven and Greg are not like Adonises, you know, and it's just like, it's really nice to see those people treated as normal. And
does Greg's farmer tan ever go away?
No.
Amazing.
No,
good.
He just embraces that shit, good. And it's great. He leans into it. It's And seeing like flashbacks of him younger with a full head of hair and
Stone
everything else.
Stone Cold animated fox.
Yeah, absolutely.
Young Greg, I'm like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, yeah. I see a real
song
him. Yeah,
sing
yeah.
that
yeah.
song about space some more.
Yeah. Right.
Mm. I'm into it.
Well, and for representation, like the having Garnet specifically, but several of the gems being coded as women of color yeah. is also yeah. incredibly powerful. Like going to Comic-Con and seeing cosplayers dressed up as Garnet, and just this like as seeing women of color dressed up as Garnet, specifically black cosplayers as Garnet, it's just so awesome. It's so great and it's so wonderful because there are so few, at least again, this could just be my lack of awareness of other animated shows, but it seems to me like there are not a lot of really powerful badass women of color superheroes. There's usually like one per show.
Ooh, there's the Arrowverse.
It's Vixen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Both Vixens, but.
Yeah. If we want to do stats on the DC TV universe, it's going to be set outside of Black Lightning, which, you know,
yeah,
don't get me
yeah.
wrong.
Yeah.
It's been great this
yeah,
year, but.
Yeah, preach. Yes. But, and that, well, that's in, even in the context of children's shows, especially children's animated shows, especially ones that this kind of show. In other hands, would definitely have a lot more dudes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it is I feel like ostensibly a premise that would primarily be a boys show in previous decades, but cast and, you know, populated by mostly women, I think is really, really mm-hmm. interesting. And the fact that despite the fact that the main character is still a boy, being informed by such a heavily female presence in like this familial unit that he's created around himself is really important, not for like people of all genders who are watching the show.
Well, and operating in a mode that on another show would only be, well, like Supergirl, doing things that you would expect a female superhero or character to do, acting right. out of empathy and compassion and understanding, as opposed to mm-hmm. being aggressive or combative or impulsive. And Steven is impulsive, but it also mostly seems like when he is impulsive, it's
it comes
either
from a really
like
good place.
Fear or fun as yeah. opposed to like temper.
Yeah.
And I think that is really cool.
Like the too. Women he surrounds himself with are great influences yeah. on him.
And he is a great influence on them.
Very true. Peace and love on the planet Earth.
Aww. All right.
It's the big warm fuzzy episode of TV Party.
Let's do our picks for next week and then let's all go home so I can keep watching Steven Universe. That's not true. I have to go home and watch Sharp Objects.
Oh no.
This is the opposite. Although please somebody get Amy Adams. Steven Universe, I'd be really excited. She can sing.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, Kate, what is your pick for next week?
I'm going with something now something completely different. Handmaid's Tale's ending next week, which means I really should catch up with Handmaid's Tale. So I'm gonna try to do that.
You're gonna be so mad. Someone's gonna make you so mad.
Yeah.
Just wanna warn you.
Yeah, but I'll just rewatch some Steven after when I need to
smell it. What about once a season? So it's only been, I guess it's only been twice, but twice that I've caught. I bet there are more. In the comments of the AV Club reviews of Handmaid's Tale, which are by me, people will say like, "Hey, so what do you watch after you're done watching Handmaid's Tale? Please let me know your coping mechanisms." It's happened twice, and this is a great suggestion. I this year when people started talking about it, I think I suggested One Day at a Time.
Mm-hmm.
Last year might have been Legends, which by the way, that was news we didn't talk about. Legends started filming again this
week. Ooh, did the I didn't know about
for,
this.
I wouldn't bring it up as news except for it's you two.
Yeah.
So it's like, and we are Team
receptive
Legends
audience,
on the show.
Yeah.
We are the Legends
the Misfits.
Of TV Party.
Yeah.
I'm a hot girl. No.
No, don't do that to yourself.
No, I was trying to just be honest.
No.
Yeah. No.
I mean, old.
No.
Let's move okay. along.
Anyway.
Yeah. You were easily Sarah Lance.
No.
No.
So, Handmaids.
Yeah. Well, Allison, what's your pick?
Harlots! that's how I wrote it in the spreadsheet, so I wanted to say it that way. I'm very excited about the return of Harlots. Harlots is... It's got some bumps. It's got some ups and downs in its first season, but I really liked it. It's my kind of costume porn, if nothing else. But beyond that, it's got some great performances, asks some really interesting questions about motherhood and sex work and gender and all kinds of things. And I really enjoy it. It also, have you watched any of Harlots?
No, I was a little turned off by some of the stuff that was going down when it first came out about stealing the story from books and not giving credit.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was a thing.
Okay.
But I'm more intrigued now.
Well, certainly. They do a thing with music, which is why I bring it up, that I find really interesting, where music will emerge organically and then it turns into something soundtracked, and it's just cool.
Aesthetically, it's very similar to Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette.
A little bit less fanciful,
yeah.
I think.
But it approximates it.
But
that.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm really enjoying it. And I've seen the first episode of the second season. And Liv Tyler joins the cast.
Oh, well.
And she, so far, is very interesting. Mostly, I just think Samantha Morton is a genius. And I just...
And yeah. Leslie Manville is in that show.
Well, that's assumed.
Yeah.
but lots of great performances. So I'm excited about the return of Harlots. What about you, Clint?
Lovely. Well, I'll follow your lead, and I'm excited about Sharp Objects because I'm all about some Amy Adams and Patricia Clarkson on HBO with some prestige or realness from the director of Wild and Big Little Lies. And adapting a Gillian Flynn novel. I'm very excited about that.
That's Marty Noxon of Unreal.
Oh, nice.
The person who adapted it. Also, fun fact, I learned this at a Q&A. Gillian Flynn.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's like a Gillian Jacobs situation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, gotcha.
Yeah.
I stand correct, or I sit in front of a microphone corrected. But also in more honest news, because I've genuinely had a hard time finding a real good next pick for next week, I'm currently rewatching As I Go to Sleep, Babylon 5, which is on Amazon Prime, which is a show that aesthetically does not hold up very well, not just because... it's very dated early 90s CG, but there's if you look, there's novels of think pieces about how they've fucked up the transfers and stuff and the ways in which it didn't survive very well the transition to HD transfers and 16:9 stuff. But it still remains one of the most well-written sci-fi shows of all time. And it's really great. And also I'm watching it partially because R.I.P. Harlan Ellison, who was a consulting producer on the show and was a sci-fi pioneer and also just a glorious asshole. So cheers to you, Harlan. I'm watching Babylon 5. Yeah,
good.
That pretty much wraps up this episode of TV Party, doesn't it?
I think it does.
It ends our party.
I wish that I could.
It's over, isn't it?
thanks. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, and some. No, I give up. You can find us on Twitter at TV Party COS. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TV Party Pod. If you have a question you'd like answered, you can email tvparty@consequencedesign.net, which no one has ever done.
Oh, please do it.
You don't have to. Yeah. But if you're like, why the fuck do you talk about Legends of Tomorrow so much? I really would love to answer.
We're happy to explain it to you.
Yeah, we really are. Thanks to Kate. And Maggie for being here.
Happy birthday, Kate.
Thank you.
You can find me on Twitter at Allison Chu. You can also hear me and Kate sometimes on the Podlander Drunk Cast and Outlander Podcast, which is exactly what it sounds like. I don't know. That's my shit. What about you, Clint?
You can find me on Twitter at Alcohollywood, and I also run the film website Alcohollywood, which also has a podcast of the same name. And I also co-host Nathan Rabin's Happycast, which you can find at nathanrabin.com.
Kate?
You can find me on Twitter at The Televerse. The Televerse is the weekly TV podcast that I co-host with Noel Kirkpatrick, and we talk about everything in TV every week, and it's delightful, so you guys can go check that out there.
It is delightful. Oh, I can vouch.
Lots of Steven Universe love over there, so go check that out. You can also find me at Consequence Sound occasionally, and I have a Steven Universe piece that will be happening eventually.
Yeah, you should.
That's right.
You'll be hearing
Reason
this.
For the season.
I have no idea when you'll be hearing this. I'm not your mom, but you'll be able to hear this on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
The piece will be publishing sometime later in the week. So look for it. Kate is a very good writer, and obviously she knows a fuck ton about this show.
No pressure. You can also find me covering the Great British Bake Off, or Great British Baking Show, as it is called in the U.S., on PBS over at the AV Club, which has been super duper fun. So you can find those going up on Saturdays. So reach out, hit me up on Twitter. I love to talk about all this stuff and so much more.
You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Podchaser, whatever your podcast platform may be. TV Party is a production of the Consequence Podcast Network. Check out our expanding roster of music, film, and television podcast programming at consequenceofsound.net.
This show is recorded and produced in Chicago, Illinois, and recorded and engineered by human gem hybrid Clint Worthington. Thanks to you guys again for being here. Maggie, do you have anything you want to plug?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I was going to say, Maggie cannot be found on social media, and that is exactly how she likes it.
That's great.
That's smart.
Live in mystery. Thanks to you so much for listening, and thanks to Rebecca Sugar and Company for making such a damn good show that filled me with glee in a dark, dark time. We will be back next week to talk about The Handmaid's Tale and the Emmys. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. I want to remind you real quick, making this show sure costs something. Subscribing to us don't cost nothing. Liking our page don't cost nothing.
You wrote the shit. We want to
do podcasts for you a little bit.
Bye.
Consequence Podcast Network.